Welcome to this week's edition of Mountain Outhouse News. I'm your host, Jam Jam. This is the craziest shit to happen in running this week. This week's stories include Hard Rock DQs, the Vermont 100 Gender Awards issue, and a new White Mountains Hut Traverse, FKT. We begin this week with a blockbuster story. As most of you know, Xavier Thévenard was disqualified from the 2018 Hard Rock 100, just 9 miles from the finish of the race at the Cunningham Gulch aid station, while he was enjoying an almost 3-hour lead ahead of second place at the time, Jeff Browning. As the facts have been trickling out into the public sphere all week, I wanted to be a bit careful about reporting on this one, but would like to share some thoughts. For an in-depth report and a timeline of what happened, check out the article posted this week on irunfar.com. Kudos to Megan Hicks for her comprehensive investigation. My own personal experience on this issue took place when Tony, the witness to the incident, came to me in Ouray with the story and picture of what he saw. He asked me if I thought he should inform the race officials. I thought Dale and the race organization would definitely want the information, but I had no idea what they would do with it. I figured they would at least approach him and be sure he didn't meet up with his crew again outside approved aid stations later in the race. This is no doubt a challenging and unfortunate situation, and one that no doubt has seemingly divided many of us, especially on an international level. Some feel rules are rules and the DQ must be enforced. Others seem to think the punishment did not fit the crime. Others have gone as far as to even say this is a conspiracy to prevent a foreigner from winning Hard Rock. I mean, seriously? Wow. My take? First off, races have rules in place for many reasons. Often it is to fulfill permit requirements. Not one race is alike, and oftentimes concessions must be made to local municipalities and land agencies in order for the event to even happen. Hard Rock cannot have dozens or hundreds of crew vehicles driving all over Camp Bird Road, the Alpine Loop, Engineer Pass, and elsewhere, willy-nilly, meeting up with their runners and clogging up the road for other land users. Some aid stations are not crewable because they simply cannot handle the volume of traffic. This is an important thing to understand in the grand scheme of things. Without this crewing rule, the race simply could not exist. Now, as far as the spot in particular where Xavier met his crew, it is a very common spectator sport for the Hard Rock. Crews are not outlawed from stopping there, and many go there to take photos, cheer on their runners, or just spectate on the drive from Ouray to Grouse. I do not know the intentions of Xavier's crew. They may have just wished to see him and his pacer and give them some encouraging words. He claims they were just there for that reason, but he did go over to them, and the witness account from Tony and photo clearly shows him underneath the open hatch of the vehicle, clearly taking aid in violation of the rule. If he indeed only took an inadvertent slip of water and some ice, and that is the entire story as he claims, the advantage he received, in my opinion, was quite minimal and possibly even quite accidental. I myself am guilty of taking some aid inadvertently back in 2015 as I crossed Mineral Creek 2 miles from the finish of the 2015 Hard Rock 100. Dominic Grossman, a friend and spectator on course who was hanging out with my crew, offered me a Pabst Blue Ribbon beer, which I gladly accepted a sip from. I didn't think much of it at the time, just as Xavier likely didn't think much of what he got. His bottles were still likely fairly full from Ouray, and he was excited to be leading the race. But he did break the rule, as did I, and we should be willing to accept the punishment. In Xavier's case, it sounded like a tough one for Dale and the Rules Committee team. They deliberated and had to make their way to him in remote sections of the course with a translator to collect his side of the story. It is not an easy situation and something they have never really faced before, especially making such a hard decision while the race is playing out. They at one point pondered a time penalty, which I thought could be a real win-win scenario in this case, showing they will enforce their rules by also accounting for the fact that the aids was not a huge factor in Xavier's commanding lead. But without that listed in their rulebook, they didn't feel right arbitrarily adding it. Without wanting to set that new precedent by making up a new penalty mid-race, they chose the harshest punishment possible, a disqualification. It should be noted, Dale gave Xavier a choice at mile 91 to complete the full distance unofficially or to drop. I will admit, it would have been inspiring to see Xavier continue on and complete the full 100 miles, but I can also understand his immense disappointment after training all year for the run and it being all for naught. So, where do we go from here? It was heartbreaking to see photos of Xavier hanging out quite aloof outside the awards banquet Sunday. I know it was the hardest thing Dale and his team have ever had to do in this race. I feel for them all. I think it's a case of Hard Rock never encountering this scenario and doing what they felt best for the integrity of their event. From here forward, I hope we can all learn from the situation, open up some new dialogues, and try to come together as a community. I have more thoughts on this I hope to share in a longer form piece, but for now, thanks for listening to my perspective, and I welcome your thoughts on this matter. At the end of the day, Hard Rock is supposed to be a run, not a race, through the mountains to celebrate the Hard Rock Miners, to push our boundaries, and to enjoy the camaraderie of one another in a beautiful place. Let's not forget that and hope that we can move forward. Thank you. On the heels of the first ever Hard Rock DQ came a second one. Dima Finehouse, super accomplished multi-day mountain runner of the likes of PTL, Euphoria, and others, in the midst of an insane thunderstorm during night two, he took a turn off course to take shelter in the Buffalo Boy Mine. Once it was calming down, he could not find the course again, and the ridge up high seemed too dangerous, so he instead ended up running down the Stony Pass Road and entering Cunningham Aid from the other direction, essentially following the old Hard Rock course, before the Green Mountain section was added. For those unaware, the Hard Rock course is a closed course, meaning you must follow it, whether marked or not, and if you leave it, you must return to the course at that spot before continuing on. Unfortunately for Dima, he did not go back to the spot he left, and there was only one option for Hard Rock, to disqualify him. I do have to note, Dima did continue and complete all 100 miles of the course, completing the entire circuit around the San Juans, although he won't get official credit. With those out of the way, we should recognize the first place finishers of the run. A huge kudos to Jeff Browning, who himself at one point was confused on course in the Pole Creek area. He actually turned around and headed back about 2 miles, thinking he was off course when he was actually on track. Despite this and a late rally by Jeff Rome, he prevailed to win his first Hard Rock 100 at age 46, in 26:20, Rome was just 14 minutes behind in a breakout time of 26:34. Troy Howard rounded out third in 27:09. For the ladies, it was all pre-race favorite Sabrina Stanley, who had been posted up at the San Juans for months. She led wire to wire, finishing a bit over her goal time in 30:23, 12th place overall. Nikki Kimball in her first Hard Rock was second in 32:18, and Darla Askew was third in 32:52. A total of 11 of the 13 starters finished. One other interesting tidbit about Hard Rock this year that I found interesting was the fact that there were 146 starters at this year's race. On the entry page, Hard Rock states there are 145 spots available. What gives? Turns out, Gordon Hardman, one of the founding fathers of Hard Rock, was added to the starting list but was never drawn in the lottery as far as we can tell. Totally fine with the race founder having special admittance, but not sure this was publicly communicated in advance. Definitely would have preferred to know that. Anyways, shout out to Gordon for all he did to bring this incredible event to life. He made it to mile 85, Maggie Gulch, before dropping from the race. And our final Hard Rock story, wow, this is a lot. The second annual post-Hard Rock mile race took place on the Silverton track Sunday with 4 participants. I think this trend started with Michael Wardian, who after many of his 100s has done a mile race the next day. Jeff Rome won in 5:34, with Wardian coming in second in 5:41. Third place was Adam Wilcox in 6:37, and rounding out fourth was John Fedverisi in 8:17. Awesome. Moving on to an update on the Grand Slam of Ultra Running. The third of 5 races in the series took place at the Vermont 100, and it looks like it was an overall success for many, with 21 out of 23 Slam hopefuls completing the race. One name absent from the list of finishers was Nicole Bitter, previously Caligaropoulos, who dropped somewhere mid-race. Next up for these folks will be Leadville, August 18th. Speaking of Vermont, a bit of a controversy boiled up in the week leading up to the race as it was brought to the public's attention that the event only gives awards to the top 5 women versus the top 10 men. Amy Rusecki, who I think is now the race director, if not directly involved with the organization of the race, wrote a defense of the award structure based upon the fact that so few women compared to men run the race, while simultaneously saying she'd like to see more women run. Although it may be a logical way to look at awarding top finishers based upon finisher percentage, I believe it misses the mark on really inspiring the next generation of female runners. What if they only awarded the top 5 women spots in Western states, but the top 10 men guaranteed entry the following year? Or just one golden ticket for every 2 men because there are lower participation numbers? I'd rather see equal numbers of awards given, as I think it will help to inspire the future. From the rumor mill, it does sound like the 6th through 10th place females were recognized, but not sure if they did in fact receive the same awards as the men. Just to be sure, I'd like to now specifically recognize the 6th through 10th place women at Vermont. In 6th was Grace Fisher of Hancock, with a finish time of 19 hours, 25 minutes. In 7th was Bebo Gao of Buffalo Grove in 1929. 8th was Jordan Grande of Ellington in 1958. 9th was Shaheen Sitar of Dallas in 2007. And finally, 10th was Deirdre Lowe of Salem in 2020. Interestingly enough, when looking at the competitiveness of the men's versus women's fields, the spread of the top 10 women was 2 hours, 8 minutes, while the spread of the top 10 men was 2 hours, 50 minutes. Based upon that, it looks like the women's field was deeper and more competitive than the men. There were 204 men versus 70 women finishers in total. The 50-mile national championships took place at Cayuga Trails. Sabrina Little came through in a huge way, with a win and course record in 8 hours, 6 minutes, while Sarah Kies was second quite a ways back in 8:44. On the men's side, it was a bit closer, with Canadian Seth Macasio of Canada taking the win in 6:56. Of course, since this is the USATF champs, Tyler Siegel was crowned champ for his second place finish, 7:06, followed by Patrick Caron, third in 7:16. So many races this weekend. On the other side of Lake Tahoe, from the infamous start of the Western States 100, was the Tahoe Rim Trail 100 in Nevada. Bree Lambert took the ladies' win in 25:28, and Jim Atkinson for the men in 21:11. Next, over to Utah for the Speed Goat. 26-year-old David Sinclair, who broke onto the scene last summer, placing second to Jim Walmsley at the Kendall Mountain Run, and then went on to win not only the Bridger Ridge Run in Montana, the Imogene Pass Run in Telluride, and the Flagstaff Sky Race in VK, now has a Speed Goat 50K win to his name ahead of some stout competition. Sinclair edged out Sage Cannaday and Tim Tollefson for the win in 5 hours, 27 minutes. Cannaday was close behind in second in 5:29, followed by Tollefson in third in 5:37. On the ladies' side, Ruth Croft dominated with a win in 6:23, no real surprise there, with the strong Taylor Nolan in second in 6:30. Lottie Albertson-Junkins was a ways back in third in 7:01. Dubai, known for many larger-than-life developments and attractions, has announced it is holding the world's longest desert ultramarathon with the largest prize purse in ultrarunning. Say what? Let's check the facts on this one. The race is 270 kilometers long, but the Ultra Gobi race in China is actually 400 kilometers. Close, but no cigar. How about the prize money of $80,000? Massive, no doubt, but still pales in comparison to the over $170,000 that Comrades gives out each year. Casey Lichtai seems to have been bitten by the Barkley bug after spending some time in Nebraska with infamous RD Gary Cantrell on his LASCON journey. She tweeted at Barkley's 15th finisher John Kelly that she's crossing her fingers that she'll be accepted next year. Seriously, another DQ? Getting exhausted. Apparently, at the Broken Goat 50K this weekend in British Columbia, race winner Carl Ogston ditched his mandatory gear at one of the final aid stations. The mandatory gear is listed as hydration carrying capacity of a minimum of 1.5 liters, 400 calories, lightweight jacket, and course map. He was reported to have left his pack behind at the final aid station, finishing with only one handheld. Regardless, he was disqualified. Ouch. Back to Silverton for one final DQ story, and then I swear I'm done for at least a couple weeks. This one brought to you by the DQ Blizzard. The Blizzard of the Month is the new Oreo Cookie Firework Blizzard featuring Oreo cookie pieces and popping candy.
Is called the Star Spangled Blizzard. It is red, white, and blue through and through with festive rock candy, hand-blended with Dairy Queen creamy vanilla soft serve, topped with more signature Dairy Queen vanilla soft serve with a curl blue rock candy, and finished with a DQ Stars and Stripes Star Kiss frozen treat.
Try it only at Dairy Queen for a limited time at participating locations. Excludes Texas. Silverton Beer Mile took place again this year, but we noticed that the first place finisher, Jeff Colt, was throwing back Bud Lights. Oh, and that foam. He finished in 7:25 ahead of Nick Curry, who came in at 7:32. Only problem with the Bud Light is it comes under the 5% alcohol by volume requirement for a legit beer mile. First place female was Celia Santi in 11:42. Now for some FKT news. Colin O'Brady destroyed the 50 states high point record by topping out on the highest point of all 50 of the United States in just 21 days, breaking the existing record by an astounding 20 days.
I'm a world record holder! Two times!
He ended up covering more than 300 miles in that time period, not to mention the insane amount of travel between points. Kudos! Liam Davis set a new fastest known time on the White Mountain Hut Traverse in 11 hours, 46 minutes, 14 seconds. The traverse is roughly 49 miles in length, linking eight huts along the rugged White Mountains in New Hampshire. Liam went unsupported and broke the previous best known time by over 50 minutes. The route goes along much of the Presidential Range, including Mount Madison, Adams, Jefferson, and Washington. Harvey Lewis officially finished up his Appalachian Trail journey in 49 days, 15 hours, making him the eighth fastest on the trail all time. Nice work, Harvey. On the heels of that, Harvey went straight over to the Badwater 135 in Death Valley, which saw some high temperatures this year in the range of 125 degrees Fahrenheit. The Badwater 135 kicked off in waves this past Monday night, starting at 8 p.m., 9:30 p.m., or 11 p.m., and was fairly stacked, with five former champs on the men's side, including Zach Gingrich, Oswaldo Lopez, Harvey Lewis, Pete Kostelnik, and Marshall Ulrich. Only two of those five finished the race, and none on the podium. It was instead Michelle Greglia, who won the day with a first-place time of 24 hours, 51 minutes. Jared Federoff was second in 25:33, and Don Reichelt third in 27:08. On the ladies' side, it was a close battle between Brenda Guajardo, edging out Pam Smith to win in 28:23 and finish fifth overall. Pam was second and sixth overall with a time of 28:47, and Micah Morgan was third in 30:08. Shout out to our very own Michael Carson, who was out there doing some filming and was out there enduring the heat firsthand. A huge shout out to our latest $50 per month Patreon supporter, Sarah Cantrell. Thank you so much for the generous support, Sarah. And with that, thanks for tuning in to episode 103 of Outhouse News. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you next time. If you have crazy stories to share, or a question or feedback for the show, please leave a comment below. If you'd like to directly support the show financially, consider becoming a Patreon supporter of this channel, or pick up this custom pair of Jam Jam sunglasses. Link below. Have a shitty week.